Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Overstated NBA Show. Once again, I'm your host, Ethan Lane, coming at you from a really cold, really dreary kind of day in Minneapolis. Fall is happening very, very quickly. And with fall kind of comes this massive head cold I've been dealing with for about the past week. I know I said that I'd try to keep myself to a more consistent schedule as we get these draft previews or these season previews out. But, you know, at the end of the day, like I have been a congested sinus nightmare for the vast majority of the previous weekend. I finally have some clarity. I have no pressure in my brain, just pressure all around me as I'm here joined by a man who's going to help me break down a division with a lot of teams that I feel are under a lot of pressure, very similar to my congestion over this past weekend. We're going to talk the Southwest Division, and I'm going to bring in a guy who I had the pleasure of meeting in Vegas, a knockdown threat at the bags range, a man who took the Kevin Garnett versus Dirk Nowitzki debate to the absolute brink with me, at least. I know we might get into that a little bit tonight if I try to defend my Kevin Garnett takes for sure, but I'm joined by the one Kyle Grondin. Kyle, welcome back to the Overstated NBA Show. How are you doing, man?
Doing good. You know, thank you for having me. And those Vegas nights seemed so long ago, and it was still this offseason. We're at this point now. What a time.
I know. Absolutely. And that was a big thing. That was my first time in Vegas, and Mikey likes to give me a lot of crap because he claimed me as his rookie as I kind of came in. And the things I don't prepare here for those long days by the pool and the heat especially. I mean, I come from a colder climate and have much fairer skin than a lot of people who go through. And what a great time to be in Vegas. I want to go back. I made the mistake, I think, for staying one day too long. I did a four-dayer. Got to make it a three-dayer next time. I looked up changing my flight, and I'm like, man, is $400 worth getting out of here a day early? I think maybe next year I got to plan for that a little bit better.
Yeah, I did 2.5 days, and that included driving days between to and from Texas. So, that was a long trip, but it was a blast. Had fun. Got to witness some great basketball games. I'm with you though. It was 65 today here in Dallas, so I got a light sweater on. I'm a little chilly.
Oh, beautiful. Just what everybody likes to hear with their basketball podcast, a little bit of weather talk. I love it. I absolutely love it. Well, we're here to talk about the Southwest Division here tonight. We're obviously going to start off with your Dallas Mavericks and kind of what their viewpoint is for the season. I notice you're wearing your Mavericks hat. Obviously, this is an audio format, but I try to like wear something a little bit in division. I look through my entire closet. I have absolutely zero Southwest Division apparel in my entire collection. I got nothing from the Spurs, the Grizzlies, the Rockets, the Pelicans. I got absolutely nothing. But what I do have here, Kyle, and I want to show these off to you, is I have a pair of absolute bangers of Scholastic Book Fair posters. Look at this.
Oh, yeah. Look at that.
Yao Ming, 2003. I even got my little Dirk Nowitzki thing here. So we're going to act like I do have a Dirk one against my better judgment. But here it is. What a time, the Scholastic Book Fair. Big shout out to the millennial kids out there. But that's what I'm bringing to the table. Let's talk about your Dallas Mavericks here. So,
yeah,
coming into your season, you're plus 200 to win your division. You're 12-1 to win the conference, 22-1 to win the NBA Finals. You turn over half your roster. You bring in a couple of promising rookies. But I don't want to start with what you guys did in the offseason. I want to start what you did before the offseason. Let's talk about those last 25 to 30 games after you brought in Kyrie Irving, where it seemed like you guys made a swing for the fences trade. You seemed to have all the momentum coming into the playoffs. And then all of a sudden, you just pulled the chair out from under your own team. I feel like you guys kind of tumbled down the rankings, didn't care about making the playoffs, didn't care about making the play-in, and just seemed content to miss a year of Luka's time, where we feel like he could get a lot more eyes and a lot more focus in the playoffs. What happened at the end of that last season, Kyle, with your team, the Dallas Mavericks?
Well, I guess there's a couple things you can get into. You know, I don't want, you know, they played poorly down the stretch. I mean, this was a, you know, as we're going to talk about this division, there's three of the bottom, I think, five defenses last year were in this division, and that includes the Dallas Mavericks, which was very bad. And not only were they bad defensively, they were by far, like, I think over a game or one rebound lower than the next lowest team, they were the worst rebounding team in the league by far. So not only could they not stop teams, they couldn't rebound once they got stopped. So that was just a recipe for disaster. And that kind of plagued the team the whole year. Like I even go back to like the very first game of the season last year was a rematch at the conference finals between Phoenix. In that game, multiple instances, Dallas got hot from three. They went up by 20 multiple times in that game, and they lost the game in the end. And it just felt like the entire season was Dallas having a good stretch shooting, going up in a game, and then losing a double-digit lead because they can't get stops and they can't rebound. And I think that plagued the team the entire year. You know, obviously, I think this Jalen Brunson thing from the offseason basically just kind of hung over the team for the entire year. I don't think the team ever really recovered, honestly. I just don't think they recovered from that situation. They had that secondary isolation scorer with Brunson that they basically lost. And so they basically try and fix it at the trade deadline with this Kyrie Irving trade. And it fell apart. I think the thing is like a lot of people like to point to this Mavericks team. Oh, well, they were the four seed before they got Kyrie. And they missed the playoffs with Kyrie, so this is on Kyrie. And, you know, I think you could go through Kyrie's entire career and point to several situations that it was his fault. I don't think last season was Kyrie's fault. I think that team was not a four seed anyway. I think the difference between 4 and 12 at the point they were a four seed was like two games. Like, so it wasn't that hard to fall that far back down. Both Luka and Kyrie got hurt after the All-Star break, and the team didn't play well. So I thought they were propped up by a little winning streak in midseason where they beat a bunch of bad teams. And they just weren't a very good team, and they didn't really recover from what was truly just a horrendous offseason the year before.
Yeah, I do want to focus on that Kyrie Irving trade, because one of the biggest things that I noticed when Kyrie went out the door, and also when you were kind of looking at the rest of that free agent, or that not that free agent, that mid-season trade deadline sort of moves that you guys were making. Obviously, you lose a guy like Dorian Finney-Smith, who's one of those lockdown wing defenders that I feel like you almost need, at least to get those stops near end of game in those critical situations. And then you lose kind of a secondary ball handler that doesn't really need the ball in his hands as much as Kyrie Irving does, and a guy like Spencer Dinwiddie, where I feel like he was actually like he was doing pretty well for you guys, like at least in terms of like not demanding the ball on a lot of possessions, but being able to get like those 14, 15, 17-point games where you can kind of have him facilitate a little bit more of the offense, take a little more of that pressure off of Luka. But yeah, I definitely agree with you there. When you looked at what happened with the Mavericks last year, it was turnstiles. They couldn't stop anybody. And maybe we'll save our Dwight Powell slander for later. But I feel like a lot of the free agent moves, the draft moves you guys made are just to solve that one sort of issue that you felt you guys had. How do you think that your draft strategy definitely played into this? Obviously, you get a guy in Derek Lively who at Duke maybe had a little bit more of a malign season. But obviously, as we've seen throughout Summer League in the preseason, like he's as advertised as a rim running big. And then you swing for a guy like Omax out of Marquette, which is probably going to be a little bit more of a project, but it's going to be one that could potentially pay dividends if he ends up turning into a guy that you think he can turn into.
Yeah, I thought it was a good offseason. I did think it was a good offseason. Some people will say it. I don't think they really overpaid for Kyrie. You know, I think I was concerned they were going to do a full max because out of the desperation of trying to keep Luka happy. And they didn't do the full max. So I thought that was a good move. And I also just think like reworking a younger roster around Luka is probably the right decision. Like you don't want to end up like late 2000s Cavs, where you're so desperate to keep LeBron happy that you're getting guys like Antoine Jameson and, I mean, who are the other guys they got? They got a few other guys during that span, too, that were kind of those older vets to try and push that win now agenda. Shaq, I think, at one point. So, you know, they pushed for that, and all of a sudden they were left with like a barren cupboard once LeBron did leave. So I do think going younger is the right play, and I think it's a good offseason. I just don't know how much it's going to help this season. I think Omax is a player. I agree with you. I think it's going to take a little bit of time. I think we've seen that in the preseason, that he's still pretty raw offensively. That's going to take a little bit. And then the Lively piece, it sounds like he's going to start. And, you know, this is the second offseason in a row they've tried to replace Dwight Powell. Last year was JaVale McGee. That basically lasted 15 games, and they benched him, and he didn't look good. So it clearly didn't work. And then now they're going with Lively, who I do think has tremendous defensive upside, and I think he could be a pretty good defensive player right away. I'm skeptical how ready he's going to be on the other side of the ball. And, you know, is he still even good enough defensively in year one to be a high-level contributor for a team that does still have playoff aspirations because they have Luka and Kyrie.
Honestly, I think it's the right move to start him because you look at the other big men in your rotation. Like, obviously, you bring in a guy like Rashawn Holmes via trade who is going to help your second unit, especially with just grabbing rebounds a little bit defensively, a little bit of offense when he's called on. And again, you're still trying to replace Dwight Powell, who I think has been a pretty, as maligned as a big man across the NBA as probably anybody else who's been under that level of scrutiny and has kind of been that player on a team with Luka that you can't have consistent production of 6 points and two rebounds when you're a starting center in the NBA on a team that wants to compete. I do want to talk about the roster overhaul a little bit. Obviously, you bring in a guy like Grant Williams. You make a couple of just kind of fill in the gaps moves, bringing in guys like Seth Curry, Derek Jones Jr., just like kind of cagey veterans who can help your second unit kind of thrive. I do want to talk the losses. There's a lot, but like, I feel like you didn't really lose anything. Like the Christian Wood experiment, I feel like you didn't really touch on a whole lot either. That was also kind of a experiment to see if he could fit in at that starting five position. But again, like the defensive liability of having him on the floor last season was kind of too much to really mitigate having him score 17 points a game. I mean, the big thing is like, I guess what I'm trying to ask is, I don't want to ask if your team got worse, because I feel like that's not a great word to describe how it went. But did your team? Do you think your team became more balanced with the moves they made this year, as opposed to kind of the 120, 130 point scoring outbursts? If you can survive in the 110 to 100 range scoring points every night, is that a okay trade off for you as a Mavericks fan?
Yeah, I'd be thrilled with that solution. I don't think they got worse. I do think they got better. The question is it better enough to make a playoffs and make some noise? I think that's the question. I'm still kind of skeptical of that. We'll see how it looks on the court, because I still don't think this is going to be a good defensive team, but I think it can't get any worse than what it was last season. So, you know, nowhere to go but up, I guess, is the solution to that. So I do think guys like Lively are going to help. I think Derek Jones is going to help a lot too. I think Grant Williams is going to be really good because, you know, when they did the Kyrie trade, I was for it just because I think they needed the light, you know, a little bit of a spark. And I think Kyrie is definitely that. And, you know, if you look at that two isolation scorer system that they had with Luka and Brunson, like, you know, for all of his faults, Kyrie is a more talented Jalen Brunson when it comes to isolation scoring. So you have that. And I think the problem was trading Dorian Finney-Smith. Now, granted, they weren't good defensively with Dorian Finney-Smith last year, but trading Dorian Finney-Smith, I did think imbalanced the roster because they just had no defenders to trot out there. And so I think, you know, adjusting that, having Grant Williams in the fold, giving Josh Green a bigger opportunity, having Derek Jones, I think he could play, you know, positions 3 through 5 in Dallas, which could be interesting. You know, I think when you talked about the backup center, I think Holmes or Powell is going to be used a little bit. But I still think it's going to be Cleaver or Derek Jones in that small ball five role a little bit more than probably, you know, going traditional big behind traditional big. And I think those are probably the solutions to the problem is, you know, we're going to try and be a good perimeter defensive team with just having these numbers and having this depth that they didn't really have last year.
That is a good point. I actually completely forgot about Kleba, and I think that's probably more because he was injured the vast majority of last season and didn't really get a chance to go out there and show. But he did show a lot of those defensive flashes when he was on the floor that I feel like, yeah, as like a small ball five or even operating at the four position, maybe alongside Lively, you could still have a lot of that spacing, but still not sacrifice so much on that defensive end. I do want to talk about Kyrie Irving a little bit here. Obviously, the plan, I suppose, worked. You move a couple of assets to bring him in, and the thought was, well, he's just going to leave you in free agency. Well, it turns out he didn't. Like you said, it wasn't an overpay. I think you probably paid him pretty much what his fair value was going to be, avoided giving him a max slot. What do you need to see out of Kyrie Irving this year versus years prior? Is it something where he needs to be more available? Is it something where he maybe needs to be a little bit less vocal, bring a little bit less attention? What do you think you need to see out of Kyrie Irving this year in order for the Mavericks to have a successful run?
Yeah, I don't know how really to judge the off the court stuff. Like, I don't think people in Texas are going to care as much, and that's just kind of the state of things. I don't need to get into all that, but I don't think they're going to care as much is the thing. I think the big thing with Kyrie, and you know, the availability is going to be the most important thing. He's got to be on the court and playing. If we're having a situation where he's playing half the games, he's playing a third of the games, whatever it was in Brooklyn, that just can't happen because we don't have the option behind him. We don't have James Harden and Kevin Durant to carry the load while he's out. You know, we need Kyrie on the court. So the availability is the big question mark, I think. And then it's just going to come down to how him and Luka develop chemistry. Like, I do think in a vacuum, those two can work offensively. I thought it was a little clunky at times, but I also think when you make these big star trades, chemistry takes a little bit of time usually. You know, the Heatles infamously started 9-8. Obviously, this isn't the same thing as, you know, that. But I do think it takes a little bit of time for the chemistry to build between two guys who are used to being the focal points of offenses. So, you know, I'm curious to see with the full training camp how all that looks on the court, because offensively, I'm not worried about Dallas. I think they're going to be able to score points, even if it looked bad in the Abu Dhabi games for preseason. They couldn't hit a shot. It was ridiculous. But, you know, I think with Kyrie, Luka, I think the offense is going to be fine as long as those two stay healthy. So it just comes down to, can they build the chemistry and is he going to be available? Those are the two biggest things.
I agree with you there. Yeah, obviously the availability is going to need to be the big thing. And as far as off-court distractions, maybe you're right. Maybe it is a different climate where he's playing now as opposed to where he's played previously. But again, it's all about keeping Kyrie happy, and it's all about keeping Luka happy, and hopefully being able to trot out a squad that can space the floor better and maybe not put too much weight on the two of those guys together. I did want to talk a little bit about Luka. Obviously, it's really hard to talk about the Mavericks without talking about Luka Doncic. I picked him in our NBA awards draft to win MVP of the year. I think that there's a roadmap for Luka to get there. Obviously, it's going to have to start in the win total. I think they're going to need to win at least high 40s, low 50 games in a bloodbath of a Western Conference. Where do you think Luka needs to focus on going into this year that he hasn't done before that can really push him above the echelon of the guys that have been in MVP consideration, your Jokic's, your Embiid's, your Giannis's, because they haven't given MVP to a guy of his position, of his skill set in a really, really long time. It's always been those rangy bigs who can kind of run their offense, get a lot of those counting stats. How crazy of a season does Luka need to have in order to even put himself in consideration, let alone win that award?
It'll be interesting because I do think, like, if he has a similar statistical season to last year and they win more games, like, it's going to be in the conversation. I mean, statistically, last season, he was, you know, 32 points a game and kind of had all the pieces there. And, you know, I think that that sort of level would be good enough to be MVP consideration if this team is competitive. And clearly the issue was that it wasn't competitive. I mean, you know, I can nitpick a few things. I think, you know, I don't think his defense is as bad as people say sometimes. I do think his maturity is going to have to change a little bit. You know, I think he kind of quit on defense at times last season. And, you know, I definitely think he let the frustrations of the season affect his on-court thing. You know, he's always annoying as hell when it comes to the referees, right? Like, he's always a pain in the ass when it comes to that stuff. But at the same time, like, it never affected his game. And I felt like it affected what he wanted to do on the court last season, probably more than ever. And, you know, I think he's just got to kind of focus on that kind of stuff. And, you know, he's always going to be one of the five best players in basketball. I think talent-wise, he's going to be in that conversation for the next decade as long as he stays healthy. It's the little things, and, you know, unfortunately, MVP isn't a results-based award, so he needs the results on the court and he needs the wins to be in that conversation.
Absolutely. I like that you brought up how he acts with the refs. Like, one thing I noticed, especially when we got to, like, the later parts of the season, I'm just like, he kind of reminded me of Blake Griffin. Like, when Blake Griffin was really kind of, like, coming into that fold and really understanding kind of the superstar pull that he had. I love when guys complain to the refs. I deal with Karl-Anthony Towns, who can be a little bit of a diva when it comes to officiating, for sure. But obviously, I don't think it's like a big perception sort of deal with with Luka Doncic, as opposed to like a guy like Kyrie Irving. I think, like you said, it's a reward based, it's a statistic based award, and obviously it's got to start translated to the win column before you can even start. But again, like, as we kind of translate to the next part here, where I want to talk about Jason Kidd, what does the record need to look like in a Western Conference that's this crowded? Where do you think the Mavericks need to be? Where would you like to see them? Like, is 500 and like a play-in spot the success that you need? Do you want to see another Western Conference Finals run? Where do you want to go?
I don't think I'm biased enough to say they need a Conference Finals run. You know, I think I joke about it sometimes, but I don't think that's a realistic expectation. I think I would be thrilled with a 44 win season where Lively and, you know, if Lively and Omax, you know, show some flashes, and Lively's a good rookie starter, makes an all rookie team, you know, Luka's on an all NBA first team trajectory again, and Kyrie is playing good ball, and this team wins 44 games and they're a top six seed, I would be absolutely thrilled, I think, at this point, especially with going younger. And if Josh Green, you know, earns a good contract after this season, I would be thrilled with all of that sort of scenario. You know, I think, you know, I did all my preseason picks, and I think I posted it on Overstated. I had them finishing ninth in the conference. And, you know, I'm with you. I think both of these conferences are a bloodbath because, you know, we're going to talk about one of these teams in a second, but my 11 seeds in each conference were like Toronto and New Orleans. And those are good basketball teams. And, you know, I think you could easily say, well, with Luka, you got to make the play-in. I don't know if the league's necessarily wired that way anymore. There are going to be good teams not in the playoffs this year. And even with 20 teams, including the play-in stuff, there are going to be good teams that miss the postseason altogether. So, you know, I think it's going to be tough. I think it's a really competitive conference, as you alluded to. And, you know, I think if they get to like 43, 44 wins and avoid the play-in, I would be thrilled, honestly.
All right. So we've talked about what you'd be thrilled by. Let's talk about the flip side of that coin. And I'm going to translate that into a conversation about Jason Kidd. Jason Kidd is your coach. Jason Kidd has had a, I don't want to say unremarkable stint as a head coach in the NBA, but you wonder, they bring him in as a player's coach, a guy who can kind of relate to this next generation, a guy who's well-respected, it seems, around the league by the players. At what point in the season do you think that there might be a knee-jerk reaction to him not being their coach anymore, and you start to look somewhere else for somebody who can maybe scheme a little bit better and kind of space that floor and maybe coach a little bit more on defense? I've watched Jason Kidd coach for years and years. I don't know what his coaching strategy is. Obviously, it's not to the point of like a Steven Silas where he just kind of rolled the balls out for 2 years and let the guys do whatever. But I wonder what impact he has on his players, and if you can't start to look somewhere else if things start to go off the rails.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. Kidd, I think, is on the hot seat this year. There were a lot of cries from Mavericks fans to, you know, get rid of Kidd after the season. And, you know, there were a lot of Mavericks fans who wanted Christian Wood to play more. I'll digress. I think I was a little more on Jason Kidd's side there, because Christian Wood looked awesome when we played the Houston Rockets and teams like that. Christian Wood did not make sense when we had Kyrie Irving and we were fighting for a playoff spot, because he couldn't play with Kyrie and Luka. So I'm kind of on Jason Kidd's side there, but I also think like the simple things that I think coaches are like in charge of, like managing the challenges, managing rotations, and like out of timeout plays, he's pretty bad at all of those. Like, you know, I didn't think he was very good at a lot of those situations. Like, there was times last year where I think we had three or four games come down to the wire, and we ran the same end of game play in all four games. One of them was against the Bucks, and like Drew Holiday just stepped into right where they were playing. People knew the plays we were running before we even ran them out of timeouts and such. And like, I think that's the sort of stuff that justifies him potentially losing his job if this doesn't work out. So I do think he's on the hot seat. I do think that he's well-liked in the locker room, and that's probably what kept his job, is that Luka and Kyrie specifically like him. And he's got to prove that, you know, he could be a well-liked guy in the locker room and be an X's and O's guy. So they've hired a really good staff around him, and he's got to prove that.
That point you made about the end of games and his play calling be a little bit more predictable than I think some other coaches, especially coming out of timeouts. I do remember that Timberwolves game about 20 games left of the year where it just ended with Luka and Kyrie playing catch with each other and nobody got a good shot off. And it just kind of turned into one of those things where I'm just like, okay, you have two of the most dynamic scorers in the NBA. Obviously, like, we've got pretty decent wing defenders, but you can't scheme up an open look for either one of these guys. You can't run some down action. You can't get somebody open. I think you're right. I think that is where he struggled. But like you said, that you've got a good staff around him. They made some changes in the assistant coaching this year. Obviously, I think another training camp, another off season where those two guys get to play together, it's going to move mountains for you guys, especially in the win column. I think you're going to be able to catch those teams on off nights where you're going to have a 40-point outburst from Luka, or you're going to have a 35-point outburst from Kyrie Irving. You're able to kind of work those guys off each other. I think there's a lot to be optimistic for, but I say that as a man with lots of Derek Lively stock, so I'm really hoping that pans out for y'all for sure.
The best case scenario is probably our rookies are playable day one, right? Like if Lively is good day one, I do think that changes the trajectory of the Mavericks because they just haven't had a defensive anchor center in since Tyson Chandler. I mean, honestly. And, you know, so I think that that would change a whole lot of what this team could be is, you know, having that sort of caliber of player, at, you know, at least to just protect the rim and rebound. You know, I think that that would just go such a long way for this team because they didn't have that last season. Yeah, if he's able to play and Omax is able to play, all of a sudden this is an interesting 10-11-man lineup that could become pretty dangerous, all things considered. But, you know, that's all hypothetical. We'll see how that all works out.
Yeah, you're really hoping that Lively can turn into like a Kristaps Porzingis type of player, especially for a team like Dallas that has needed one of those since, I think, Kristaps Porzingis. So,
yeah.
Sorry, I had to get that subtle dig in there for sure. Yeah,
that was a low blow. It's okay.
I'm sorry. I didn't bring up Jalen Brunson's dad that whole time, so I feel like I pulled my punches a little bit, but we'll save that for the next time you come on for sure. We'll see if he keeps sounding off on this season again for sure.
Yeah. I'm just happy the Jalen Brunson thing's behind us. You know, that whole last season, having to remind ourselves that Jalen Brunson's not on the team, bad front office management. That's what it was.
Hey, I can't throw any stones. I am a Timberwolves fan, so my front office is well maligned and well documented on that maligning. So I can't throw any stones there for sure.
Maybe Derek Lively will have a Walker Kessler type season.
Oh, that's it. Get off the pot. That's it. That's going to do it for us here. You jerk. All right, let's move on to the Memphis Grizzlies, TMZ's favorite team last year, for all the reasons that have been well documented across the NBA and across the news space. Obviously, Ja Morant not going to play the first 25 games of this upcoming year. Their best player, their table setter, their leading scorer. Their over-under is still 46.5. They're projected 2.5. They're projected 2 wins more than the Dallas Mavericks coming into the season. They're plus 140 for the division. They're 13-1 to get, win the conference, and they're 30-1 to win the title. Really weird. Their division odds are better than the Mavericks, but Vegas thinks they're less likely to win the conference and also less likely to win the title. So figure that out. Memphis fans will probably have something to say about that. I know they're very, very vocal about their team. And this was a Memphis team that didn't really make a whole lot of changes. I mean, the only big thing that they saw was, again, one of their more entertaining players, Dylan Brooks, was able to walk out the door and get paid by their division rival, the Houston Rockets. But then they're able to trade for a guy like Marcus Smart to really kind of fill that bulldog, that defensive leadership role that, that I think that team really got out of Dylan Brooks, despite all the antics. But it's a guy that you bring in and he's going to work wonders. And then, I mean, they signed a guy like Derrick Rose. I don't know how much playtime he's going to get, but it is kind of interesting to look at that backcourt and see Ja Morant, Marcus Smart, and Derrick Rose all on the same team. And obviously, it's 2023. We're maybe past the prime time of Derrick Rose, but there's a thought process with him in the fold and Tyus Jones out the door. We maybe see a little bit more playtime. What are your thoughts on the Memphis Grizzlies coming into the season, especially for those first 25 games that Ja's not going to be around? What kind of team are we going to see? Are we going to see some guys that didn't get a whole lot of run last year kind of have their opportunity to shine, whether it's a Kenneth Lofton, whether it's a Santi Aldama, whether it's a Jake LaRavia? What are you seeing out of the Memphis Grizzlies, especially this first part of the season? Because that's what they need to get through until Ja can come on back.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by Memphis. You know, they did get 5 wins worse from the season before, but they won 51 games. Given all the circumstances behind the team, like, you know, the whole Ja Morant thing, it's been well talked about, it's been well documented. Not only that, like, I mean, they basically, as soon as the season ended, they told a starter, "We don't want you on the team anymore." Like, can you imagine how bad that had to be in the locker room that they're like, "Yeah, we're good." You know, before even free agency tampering or anything, that they basically said, "We're good." And this team won 51 games. Like, I think that's an impressive job. I think it's an underrated job by Taylor Jenkins to be able to kind of manage this situation and still finish second in the West, given all the circumstances. But the issue is that this team needs Ja Morant to, you know, eventually reach its goal to win a title, right? Like, you know, I just think the biggest questions when it comes to Memphis is the whole Ja Morant thing. How's he going to look when he's locked in? Talent ends up winning in this league, right? There's not many teams you can look at that didn't have a top 10 player in the league and won a championship. So Ja Morant has to play like play like a top 10 player, which I think 2 years ago, you could argue he was a top 10 player in the league. And I think last year, the off-the-court circumstances obviously made it more difficult, but I think you could also argue that he was a little bit worse last year. He's a little more inefficient on offense. I thought he was forcing the issue sometimes a little bit more than in years past, and that's where you go get a guy like Marcus Smart, who, you know, can handle, I think, more ball-handling responsibilities, obviously, than Dylan Brooks. And, you know, for as crazy as Marcus Smart can be sometimes, he's the more rational Dylan Brooks, you know, and he's going to be able to handle some ball handling responsibilities. And I think this backcourt of Ja when he comes back, Smart and Desmond Bane can be really dynamic. I think that could be a really good trio in the backcourt. And then you have Derrick Rose, who I don't think is good as Tyus Jones. And I think historically, you know, I think people have looked at the Grizzlies record without Ja Morant. I think a lot of that has been because Tyus Jones is such a capable backup point guard. I don't think Derrick Rose is going to be that, but I do think he could provide a spark off the bench at least.
You're speaking my language. Tyus Jones is my guy, Minnesota guy. Shout out to Apple Valley High School. I loved watching him at high school. I loved watching him at Duke, and I loved when he was on the Wolves, and I hated that we let him go to a team like the Grizzlies. And now I think he's going to get that chance to shine, whether in a reserve role or even a starting role on that Wizards team that I'll get to on probably a future episode. But like you said, The Grizzlies are fun, and I hate to call them fun because they're so darn hateable, and maybe that's from the Minnesota fan in me, but also it's like there's a lot of my dudes that I just have outstanding grudges towards on this team, and I love that there's a team in the NBA like the Memphis Grizzlies that not only is hated, but loves to be hated. They bring in a lot of those guys, obviously Marcus Smart. You can ask anybody on the street, and they'll be sure to tell you what they think about Marcus Smart. But the one thing that I do applaud this team for doing is taking a lot of guys from the college game that a lot of people said wouldn't work in the NBA and said, okay, watch this. We're going to try this, and you guys are going to love these guys. They take a guy like David Roddy out of Colorado State, who you could ask any like hardcore NBA fan a year or two prior who David Roddy was. You can even ask me as a college basketball fan. I would have no idea who the 6'4", 255-pound power forward for Colorado State is. But you saw him coming in near the end of the season in spot minutes and absolutely tearing it up. Same thing goes for a guy like Kenny Lofton Jr., a guy who played for Louisiana Tech, but he comes in, he's a unique body type, he's a unique skill set, and he's just an absolutely lovable player to play and watch play basketball. And that's where I kind of wanted to get to my next point here. Like, we talked about with the Celtics having like a great top six, one of the better top sixes in the NBA. I'd say that Memphis with Ja Morant, when you include Marcus Smart, Desmond Bane, Steven Adams, Jaren Jackson Jr., and then X guy off the bench, whether that's a guy like Xavier Tillman or Luke Kennard or Santi Aldama, like they have a really good roster, but you need to like see one to two of those guys take the next step in their development. And I'm talking about their bench guys before I feel like you could really start talking about them as that contender for an NBA title. Which players on that team do you really see taking that next step?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think it is a pretty interesting group to kind of build off of. And, you know, I think that's been kind of the Memphis's MO. You know, I did mention Ja at the top. I think he's got to be locked in. But the other interesting thing about Memphis, hey, when you talk about that 2021-2022 team that's now 2 years ago, what made it so special was the depth of options they had. You know, they had a D'Anthony Melton. They had a Kyle Anderson. They had a Tyus Jones. They had a Brandon Clark, who's out for the year with this Achilles injuries, I believe. So, you know, that's all of a sudden four pretty good rotation players from that team 2 years ago that won 56 games that aren't there. You know, those guys are gone. And, you know, they believe in their talent development process. You know, I know they brought in guys like Rose and Kennard, but it is going to come down to those guys like David Roddy, Santi Aldama, Xavier Tillman, Kenneth Lofton. You know, maybe Jake LaRavia has a better year two. You know, one or two of those guys definitely have to step up. I really like Aldama. You know, I just think, you know, a valuable stretch big. I think he could do a couple of different things offensively. I think he's going to be a pretty big contributor for this team, especially as they have to replace Clark. And, you know, I think they could use a little more depth at those big spots. So I do think he's the most interesting of the bunch. But I also think I'm with you. I think, you know, thick body Roddy, I think he's going to be I think he's going to be a pretty big contributor for this team too. So yeah, I think those guys, especially on those wing spots, are going to be pretty key for this team to kind of realize its potential. You know, there is Roddy, who showed flashes. There's Kennard, who's obviously a lights out shooter. You know, John Conchar, you know, he might slide into the starting role for this team while Ja's out, or maybe he'll just be a bigger bench contributor. And he's kind of been that analytics guy the last couple of years. He's a terrific rebounder for a guard. They're going to need him to be a little more than just a terrific rebounder too. He's got to be a contributor for this team. Maybe we get a bounce back Zaire Williams season. You know, there's a couple guys that I think I'm pretty interested in. It's just a lot of, you know, in theory, this guy could be good. And we have to see two or three of those guys really pan out.
If there's a silver lining to John Morant not playing for 25 games, I feel like these 25 games are going to be a really good chance for Taylor Jenkins to look down his bench and see, who are my guys going to be for the rest of the season? Who can I slide into these critical moments when I don't have John Morant, my best player, available? Who can I count on to get those points, get those stops on defense, be able to kind of get in an opponent's head, as Memphis has been really famous for doing over the past few seasons? And I think you're right. It's going to have to be at least two or three of those guys. You shouted out Santi Aldama. I think it's going to be Xavier Tillman. I was a big Xavier Tillman guy when he played for Michigan State. He's always been a really calming force when he comes into games, especially when Jaren Jackson Jr. gets into foul trouble, which he does early and often on a vast amount of occasions. It's going to be a really interesting team to look at. I asked you this question for Dallas. I'm going to ask you again for Memphis. What does a successful season look like for the Memphis Grizzlies as you come into the season? Do you want to see them make another second round exit? Do they need to punch through to a conference finals or potentially an NBA finals for this to be a success? What are you thinking there?
You want to see this team make the next step, right? I mean, this has been a good regular season team 2 years in a row. They've won 50 plus games each of the last two seasons. So the expectation is no longer, can you win 50 games, make the playoffs, get everyone excited. Ja has a couple cool dunks. That's all fun and games. You know, the next step is when they face these teams that they face in the playoffs, especially, you know, they've played two veteran teams in the playoffs, whether when it's the Warriors and the Lakers, and at times they've looked overwhelmed. And it seems like their youthful energy almost is a negative, where they're being outplayed in some situations. And I know Ja got hurt in that Warrior series, and that played a part in it. But yeah, so how is their maturity going to hold up in the playoffs? Can they convert in the half court, which I think is going to be a big question for their offense and has been for the last couple of years? Can they convert in the half court to be able to beat some of these teams in the playoffs and make the next step, which is winning one or two playoff rounds? And, you know, maybe not making the finals, but I do think a successful season may involve the conference finals, because this is now the expectation on this team after multiple good seasons in a row, right?
I mean, it almost has to be. You have to make that next step, like you said. I think it's going to be in a couple of things. First, I think they need to survive John Morant coming back. And then I think if there's any team in the Western Conference that cares about going for a one seed, I think it needs to be, and I think it's going to be the Memphis Grizzlies. I think that they are going to really push in the regular season to run teams off the floor, like you said. But at the end of the day, you need to be able to function in that half-court offense that teams can throw out at you. There will be teams in the playoffs that will figure out how to slow down Memphis. We've seen that over the past couple of years. They need to figure out who those table setters are going to be. And if it's a guy like Marcus Smart, who's had the playoff experience, if it's going to be one of these younger guys who can kind of step in and take on a more traditional role player role, maybe to get a guy like John Morant more off the ball, some of that less frenetic energy, I think that's going to have to be what that next step is going to be.
I completely agree with that. And it's just going to come down to, I think their lineups are going to be interesting. Like, I think I wanted them to do more like Ja and Tyus Jones lineups at times last season. And I just didn't feel like they did it a whole bunch, especially in big spots, because A, the defensive backcourt ability of Tyus Jones and Ja Morant, I think was a problem. And then B, they can't take Adams off the floor because they need a rebounder at the end of games, right? You know, they need one of those guys out there because, you know, Jaren Jackson's biggest weakness is his rebounding. I mean, that's just what it is. So the good thing now is that you don't have that issue because Marcus Smart can play defense. You know, he could play with Ja Morant in theory. So can that five, though, if they stay healthy, I feel like that should be good enough to at least win a playoff run and make some noise.
Yeah, I'm very excited for this Grizzlies team. I'm excited to watch them make the playoffs, and I'm hopefully excited to watch them fall on their face again, just so I can have that little feeling in my heart. And I did mention how I hate Marcus Smart. I'm not sure if you know this. There's a traumatic memory of mine that involves Marcus Smart from his time at Oklahoma State. He beat Kansas on our home floor, snapped one of the longest home winning streaks in college basketball at the time. And then the man had the audacity to do a backflip on our center court logo. So shout out Marcus Smart. I'm still not over it. It's been darn near a decade and you have still hurt me. And I demand some sort of compensation for that. Moving right along, I do want to talk about the New Orleans Pelicans here, team that made some noise near the end of the season. Obviously, we're going to have to talk about Zion Williamson, who is once again going to be the linchpin that dictates this team's overall success. They bring in a former top five pick in an NBA draft. Shout out Cody Zeller. They draft Jordan Hawkins out of the national champion UConn Huskies. They let a couple of key role guys walk. Maybe not key role guys is the wrong word. They let some guys walk. They let Josh Richardson go. Jackson Hayes signed with the Lakers. Willie Hernan Gomez, they said goodbye to him. I mean, but at the end of the day, the entirety of the success of this team is going to fall on Zion Williamson's very broad shoulders. Their over-under is 45.5. They're plus 220 to win the division. So there's some at least some money going towards them to make at least a little bit of noise, at least during the regular season. And I assume that really depends on whether or not Zion Williamson is going to be healthy for the majority of this season. Kyle, give me your thoughts on a team that you said you've picked 11th in the Western Conference. Obviously, we're not high on Zion's availability, or what's going on in your head there?
Well, it's not even just Zion's availability. Unfortunately, for a team that has had injury issues the last few seasons, they're already dealing with injury issues. Like Jose Alvarado got hurt in the offseason, you know, Najee Marshall got hurt in their last preseason game. Trey Murphy is already on the shelf, and he was, you know, a pretty trendy most improved player pick. I think he could be in that conversation. So you already have these guys already going on the shelf, and that doesn't even include Zion and Brandon Ingram, who have had their own fair share of injury troubles. So I think that's a little bit of my concern. And, you know, I'm probably New Orleans has the greatest variance of any Western Conference team. Like, you could talk me into New Orleans being a top three seed in the West, and I probably wouldn't push back that much if you're really betting on a healthy Zion and Ingram. And you could probably talk me into them being like an 11 or 12 seed because those guys aren't healthy. And it really just comes down to the health, it seems like, for a large part. You know, we still haven't really seen Zion and Ingram fully click on the court, and we just haven't really got enough opportunity to see it because they haven't been healthy. So, you know, it's still a team that in theory should be really awesome. And when they have had all their guys, they've had really good success, but it's just really hard to kind of peg what this team's going to be until we see it all. You know, this team has two really gifted players at the top. They have insane depth, especially if we get some Dyson Daniels development this season. You know, this team is 10 deep solid. Like their 10th guy would be Dyson Daniels, Jose Alvarado, Larry Nance Jr., Najee Marshall, and, you know, Trey Murphy. That's a great bench. Like, so if they get everything to work out, this could be a really gifted team. It's just, it's hard to bet on them at this point. I got to see it to believe it.
When Zion Williamson played, the offensive numbers were otherworldly. They're a much better team when Zion has the ability to play. He helps them in the rebounding side of things. He can space the floor well. He creates such a matchup nightmare just from his frame alone and his skill set. And I almost feel like when I see a line of 44.5, I feel like they're betting that just Zion's not going to play. And I want to smash that over because I think the Pelicans could be a really good team because obviously you say you bring up the depth, you bring up obviously Zion's availability, you bring up that Ingram has been like a really serviceable player when Zion hasn't been in the fold. But again, like I can't bring myself to bet on a team like this without knowing the full story, without knowing the full picture, without knowing how many games Zion Williamson is going to play. Like if Zion Williamson plays 45 games, I think that's an easy over. But if he ends up playing 25, then it becomes a question of, again, you've already brought up the health concerns. Like these role players are going down and down and down. But even then, I feel like New Orleans was a team last year because of those health concerns that I could look at any box score, I could turn on the game, and I'd be like, oh my God, Najee Marshall has 25 points. How the hell do they have this guy as the 12th man on their roster? And they've got like seven of those guys. You didn't even mention a guy like EJ Liddell, who was really solid in college playing for Ohio State. When he fell to them in the second round, I was like, oh my God, you just scored a stud in college. And we watched him tear it up in summer league. He's a little bit of an undersized forward. But again, they have six or seven of those dudes that are on their bench that will get the potential to play. But again, because of the health concerns, because of a lack of consistency, they haven't had a chance to really figure out if any of these guys are like serviceable rotation guys. And if you're a team like New Orleans, you're going to need to start making a lot of those decisions really soon, especially with guys like Jonas Valanciunas and CJ McCollum getting a little bit older. You're not going to want to keep those guys in your roster for an extended period for the next maybe 3 to 4 seasons. You're going to have to start to figuring out if any of these guys are good. I've gotten all the way through this like 90-second monologue about how they haven't figured out if these guys are good at all. I haven't even mentioned a guy like Kira Lewis, who was amazing at Alabama. And I don't think he's barely played because of guys like Alvarado maybe taking up a little spotlight, being a little bit better defensively. If you're looking at all of these guys, if you're trying to like set one free or really focus on them throughout this development season, obviously we can look at a guy like Trey Murphy, who shot 50% from downtown last year, damn near, pretty close. We can kind of consider him as a lock. Do you need to give Dyson Daniels 20 games to start at point guard and give CJ McCollum a little bit of rest? Do you need to give a guy like Jordan Hawkins, who just drafted with a lottery pick? I don't even think he'd see the floor with all of these guys on their bench.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so many options that they can go to. It becomes the question on, you know, who could they rely on? And, is it the Bill Simmons too many guys thing? Is there too many guys trying, you know, want a piece of the pie sort of situation? But yeah, I mean, I think it comes down to who on this depth can they really rely on? Who's going to take the leap to be a significant contributor down the stretch? And then, you know, if, you know, I still look at this lineup too and say, if Zion does get hurt again, there's still enough pieces to this team that they should be more competitive. I think one of the things that kind of went under the radar, like CJ McCollum had a pretty poor year last year. I didn't think he was very good. And, you know, for his standard, at least, you know, I thought it was a pretty poor season for him. And, you know, I think if they just had a solid CJ McCollum season, this team's probably closer to the 8 or 7 seed than it is the, I think they ended up the 9 seed. So, you know, I think that's something, those little things I think can make a little bit of difference. And if they get a better CJ season, if Brandon Ingram continues to do his thing, you know, I think all of this could really work. I am expecting when he's on the court, Trey Murphy to have a leap this season. And he's going to have a couple, I think he's going to have more than a couple 30-point nights where, you know, Ball Don't Stop's going to be tweeting about it and going crazy. And there's going to be games like that for this team that are really exciting. It's just, can they establish that consistency and be that great team consistently, I think is the biggest question.
For sure. I do want to close the Pelicans' thoughts with one thought. I'm putting you on the spot. If you had to put a number on how many games Zion Williamson is going to play this season, what is that number?
I'll say 50. I gotta see more than 50 to believe it at this point. So if he gets 50 games, I could see it happening. I think that's still pretty good news for New Orleans if he gets that many too.
So for sure. I do want to put your 50 games in context. He's played 114 games in his career since he's been drafted. So he's gonna need to increase that number of games played by almost 50%. I'm not trying to scare you away. I'm just trying to put you in context that like when Zion Williamson came into Duke as the number one recruit and was running on that team with RJ Barrett and Cam Reddish, this man was superhuman. He was house of highlights. He was hitting 360s in game. He was jumping from the paint to block guys at the free throw line. And this man is an otherworldly talent. If he can stay on the floor, stay healthy, and stay out of a certain a certain occupation's DMs, I think he can do a really, really good job in terms of keeping himself in some positive highlights and out of some potentially negative ones. Let's move on to my most intriguing team in this division. Arguably, it's one of the most intriguing teams in the league. I don't know what the plan is. I look at their roster. I love it. I love it so much. Let's talk about the Houston Rockets, whose over-under is 31.5. They're plus 4,000 to win the division. It's not worth my time to read their conference or NBA Finals odds. If you want to throw money away, feel free. Maybe put down a nice $5 bet. Maybe count on a youth movement taking place. But this team filled out some edges to their roster. They got a little older. They got a little wiser. They traded out Steven Silas for a proven coach in Ime Udoka, who is going to change a lot of the roll the balls out, let them do whatever kind of energy that I felt has kind of maligned the Rockets over the past couple of years. They bring in a phenomenal draft class with Amen Thompson, Cam Whitmore, who fell to them at the late end of the first round. I still don't know how that happened. But then they bring in a couple of veterans, maybe a little confusing in their usages, not as confusing in their paychecks as we talk about these new salary cap rules. Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks. Dylan Brooks already up to his normal antics, getting kicked out of preseason games, doing what he does best. This team got a lot more exciting. I don't want to talk about Kevin Porter Jr. It seemed like I saw today that one of the charges that was being held against him was dropped, but he's still facing two charges that could probably see him take time away from the team. I'm not even considering him for this roster. They bring in a proven head coach, and I can't help but look at this roster and think that the next step is going to be Jalen Green's ascension into one of the top 20 or 25 players in the league. Where are you sitting on Jalen Green? I know it's weird as we get used to these G League Ignite guys coming into the league. There's not as much tape. I'm not watching them on ESPN on a Tuesday night because it's harder to find those games. How do you feel about Jalen Green as he comes in? He gets a real coach. He gets some real players to play with. Where do you think the next step needs to be for him to kind of help Houston get to those heights that we saw in the early 2000s?
Yeah, it just feels like it comes down to, you know, can he play within the system? You know, I think the problem, you know, the biggest appeal to a Fred VanVleet is that he can play off of Jalen Green and also get Jalen Green in good spots to succeed. And that's just something they haven't had with the point guard situation where, you know, it was Jalen Green and Kevin Porter Jr. kind of running the show. And I just don't think it worked. It didn't work. And, you know, I think Jalen Green has shown a ton of flashes throughout his career, you know, his very short career, two seasons in. I think he's shown a ton of flashes, but I also think it's fair to say that there's been a lot of negatives for the first two seasons as well, and some bad habits that need to get cleaned up. And honestly, if he cleans up some of those bad habits, if he gets a little more efficient this season, regardless of how good he is, that might make Fred VanVleet worth his contract and then some. If he can get the best out of Jalen Green and really maximize Jalen Green's game, then Fred VanVleet is worth every penny spent on him. And I think that was the big reason for bringing in these adults is that, I mean, they legitimately needed adults. You know, only so much of the Boban good vibes can fix a franchise. And, you know, this team was the second worst defense in the league and a bottom four offense in the league last season. And, you know, some of it was they were tanking. But I also think some of the guys that they, you know, some of the younger guys that they had, well, I think all of them have shown flashes and all of them have shown a crazy amount of potential, also had some frustrating moments last year.
I don't think you can talk about flashes of potential more than what we saw, at least in that one game we saw in Summer League with Jabari Smith Jr. absolutely shooting the frickin' lights out. And you wondered what he would do. And obviously, as a guy who watches a lot of college basketball, you watched him play. You watched him play at Auburn and he played with ball controlling guards, who took him out of games a lot, who chucked up a lot of shots, and it took the ball out of his hands. Then he gets drafted to a team with ball-controlling guards who take the ball out of his hands, chuck up a lot of shots, and he doesn't get the chance to shine. Fast forward to this Summer League game, and Jabari Smith Jr. scores, what, 30 points? Upwards of 30 points in that Blazers game, including that ridiculous game-winning shot? Like, I'm so high on Jabari Smith Jr. taking that next step into a second-tier player, in his sophomore season, as we kind of move through the overall season here, I think he's going to really step up a lot. Brett has been documented about being really high on Alperen Şengün as an offensive player, as kind of more of a hub that can be used in a coherent offense. But like you said about bringing adults into the room, it was Boban Marjanovic leading a group of kids and a coach that didn't really feel like he was interested in coaching. But now you fast forward to a guy like Ime Udoka, who's going to not let these guys off the hook, especially on defense. He brings defense. This team was terrible last year on that side of the ball. This is a team that's not going to get run off the court nearly as much. And now I feel like with their draft picks, with the signings they've made, they're not going to be in a position where they have been the past couple of years where they're trotting out guys like DJ Augustine or a guy like Willie Cauley-Stein in those clutch moments. Like, you're going to be bringing in guys who are not afraid of moments. You're going to have a guy like Dylan Brooks who can maybe set the culture of your team. Not sure if you want him with the keys to that culture, but hey, he's going to be a vocal mouthpiece whether we want him to or not. And again, like that draft class, Amen Thompson, if Kevin Porter Jr. doesn't play a lot with a team, I could see him closing games at the point guard position. I mean, if you need an arrangier defender than Fred VanVleet to get a stop, put him in the game. If Cam Whitmore breaks the rotation, he seems like he's ready to come in with an attitude of, I should not have been the 20th pick in this draft. I was mocked top five across the country for the most part. And then a story came out where maybe there's a medical thing. Maybe I don't care as much about playing basketball as you want me to. I'm going to show you that I care about playing basketball, and I'm ready to like mess some guys up on both ends of the court. I'm really excited to watch this team.
Yeah, I think this to me is the most fascinating team in the league that still might win like 33 games. And I think that'd be okay. I think that'd be a successful season still, depending on how at least they look on the court and the maturity. And, you know, I think I'm buying into what the Rockets are trying to sell right now, because I'm interested. You know, there's not going to be, you know, there, if you just look at the guys who played for this team in the last couple seasons, you know, there's no like, oh, Josh Christopher just needs minutes. There's no Garrison Matthews. There's no, who's the other guy? Deshaun Nix was, you know, Houston fans would pull their hair out talking about Deshaun Nix, right? You know, there's no longer those guys in the lineup. Like, if you look at the 10th guys on this team, you got Reggie Bullock, who's still a serviceable basketball player, I think. You got Jeff Green, who just won a championship. You got Jayshon Tate, who, you know, kind of dealt with a lot of injuries, but he has shown flashes in his career too, his young career. You got Jock Landale, who's I think is a serviceable and good backup big. You got Tari Eason, who's shown a ton of flashes as this, the, you know, wing defensive dynamo. Like, there are a lot of interesting pieces, and I think what I'm most interested in with Houston is the lineup versatility. There are so many different, I think, creative lineups they can run. Like, their starting lineup is probably going to be Fred, Jalen, Dylan Brooks, Jabari Smith, Alperen Şengün. I think that's a good starting five, a good young starting five. I want to see Amen Thompson with Jalen Green and Fred VanVleet. I think that would work, because I think Fred VanVleet can also play like against a dynamic, creative player like Amen Thompson. I think you play off him and shoot. You know, I think they could go super wingy and play guys like Cam Whitmore, Tari Eason, Jabari Smith Jr. together too. There are a lot of different interesting combinations I think they can use with these players that blend this young talent that they're trying to bring up with a lot of these vets that they want to kind of set the table for these guys and show them how to be pros. So I'm fascinated in this team. I really am.
So I'm going to kind of tease myself a little bit here. I'm going to start doing a little like league pass team of the week. The Houston Rockets are in heavy contention to be that first team that I watch. I'm ready to break into the league pass sphere. I don't use it nearly as much as I should over the past couple of years, but I'm going to dive in this year. And I'm so excited to watch this team for, like you said, like they're so versatile. They have so many options. Literally anything could happen. But again, like if they won 30 games, is that a moral victory? I'd say maybe not for some of those veterans, but for those younger guys that you're looking to develop, I think that that is something that they could really use to build on, because again, it's not a win now sort of move. It's a set of culture. Figure out if any of these young guys are good and if you could use them in any sort of serviceable way over the next 3 to 5 seasons. And then you can start to focus on building a contender. And we talk about building a contender. These guys have a lot of picks. They've got a lot of picks from the James Harden trade, especially. They've got a bevy of young players. There's nothing that could stop this team from being active at a trade deadline or going into a free agency. Then the table is set. They just need to figure out how they're going to serve up what they're looking for. I'm really excited for this team. Who's the five that closes out a close game for this team, though? I want your take on this. What five guys are you trotting out? You need to stop. You're down by 3. Who are you putting out there?
Down by 3 and you need to stop. I think Fred, Dylan, and Jabari are definitely out there. You could talk me into a defensive situation where Jock Landale's in there. Şengün's maybe in on offense, and then, you know, you could also put Amen Thompson out there, who, you know, we haven't talked about the Thompson twins. Amen looks like he could be a stud on defense and also a creative point guard too, given his with his size. So, you know, that would be a really fun five as well as far as defense goes. And, you know, offensively, you could also, you know, you could put Şengün back in for offense. You could put Jalen Green back in for offense. If you need a corner three, you could put Reggie Bullock out there for offense. Like, there are a few different ways you can go with this team too. So there are just so many options that I'm curious to see how Ime handles all this, because there are so many players that I think are going to want playing time. Like, you know, I know Jeff Green won his title. He's, you know, a little older than what he is. I don't think he's going to want to go here and just sit on the bench behind all these guys, but they also have Jabari Smith Jr., Tari Eason, Cam Whitmore, Jayshon Tate, who are all desperate for playing time as young players trying to stick it in the league. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how all that works and how that chemistry builds. But I also just think there's so many options to go with that it could be really interesting.
they're going to be really active. I think they're a trade away. I think you just kind of laid it out for me. They have so many options. I feel like they almost have too many. And as they start to develop who they think their guys are going to be in those closing situations, I expect them to make some sort of big swing. I don't know what the swing is yet, but it's going to be there. It'll probably start late November, mid-December, that they're starting to kind of ask around on a couple of players. And I'm really interested to see who that player is going to be. Let's close it out. The hypest, most exciting team in the Southwest Division because of the man that they drafted. Of course, I'm talking about Sidy Sissoko, knockdown standout from the G League Ignite. No, of course not. I'm talking about Victor Wembanyama, the number one pick, who's already out here doing video game shit in the preseason, stealing the ball from outside the three-point line when a guy's in the paint. The man has alien arms. It doesn't make sense how he works. He doesn't smile. This man is a killing machine designed to play basketball. And San Antonio's over-under is 28.5. What does Victor need to do to raise the ceiling for this San Antonio Spurs team as they come into this year with, I feel like, pretty much the same roster as last year? Like, the elder statesman on this team is Doug McDermott. Shout out McBuckets. And then they have guys like Chetty Osman and Zach Collins. Those are your oldest dudes on the team, your most experienced NBA players on the team. You bring in Devontae Graham, a guy who I personally love, but at the NBA level, I don't think he really moves the needle a whole lot. Where do you see this team going this season? Is this a season that we should start to think about them in the play-in? Is this a Wembanyama not enough, especially in this hotly contested Western Conference, to really move the needle so much to consider them for a playoff spot?
I think he's going to be awesome. I think he's going to win Rookie of the Year. And I think, you know, just as far, you know, everyone sees the highlights. You know, I think one of the things that is going to be kind of, you know, underappreciated as the season starts, and if you haven't really watched Wembanyama games when he was playing in France and all that kind of stuff, how smart he is on the basketball court. And it's not even just the flashy plays, the step back, crossover step back fades, all that sort of stuff. You know, it's the play-to-play basis where he's actually really smart on the basketball court. He gets positioning really well. I do think he... You know, I do think he's going to have a few moments that the game looks a little fast for him at times, but he also has the 7-4 and insane wingspan to make up for looking a little slow at times. You know, there were plays in France last season that it seemed like he was willingly giving up offensive rebounds just to block guys' shots. And I'm curious to see how some of those plays look when it comes to the season, because he's still the tallest and longest guy on the court. So, I mean, it may not matter, and he is physically dominant. So it's going to be fun. I do think, as optimistic as Spurs fans are about this season, I think rightfully so, because Victor Wembanyama is a truly fascinating basketball talent. I wouldn't be shocked if the Spurs aren't good this year again, and if they're one of the worst teams in the league. They had opportunities to get guys that I thought could have contributed for this team. You know, you could talk about, could they have been more aggressive for an Austin Reeves in free agency? Potentially. But I also think they had, they got Reggie Bullock and Campaign in trades, basically taking salary, and cut those guys. And I think if this team wanted to be good, they would have kept those guys and kind of built them and built that bench out a little bit. But it doesn't seem like they're too worried about being good this season. So I think he could raise the roof a little bit this season, the ceiling of this team a little bit. But I'm not expecting him to instantly step on the court and make this a 41 team. Especially with how talented the West is. I think if he has a successful season and looks as dominant as we all expect, I think that's a successful season no matter the record.
Yeah, I look at the Spurs roster, and I think it really comes down to four guys that they're building around, and it's pretty obvious who those four are. I think it's going to be Wemby. It's obviously going to be Sohan. They just re-signed Devin Vassell to a pretty sizable contract. And then I'd say that fourth guy, it's probably Keldon Johnson, but I honestly wonder about his ability to kind of function on this team if he doesn't have the ability to get as much opportunity offensively as he has had over the past couple of seasons. Obviously, he's been kind of an offensive focal point of the team, averages about 18, 20 points a game. But if you take the ball out of his hands, I wonder what he does as kind of like an undersized 3-4 guard as you look at the rest of this roster around him, especially on the defensive end. The other thing that worries me is the point guard rotation. They bring in Trey Jones, and like you said, they had ample opportunities to get guys who could be better or maybe more experienced playmakers for a guy like Wembanyama in his first year. I feel like Trey Jones was kind of a safe re-signing, and I like Trey Jones as much as I love Tyus, but at the end of the day, there was a move to make, and San Antonio just didn't make it. So I don't know if there's like you said, as much pressure to be as good this year. But again, they're kind of in the same league as the Rockets. Something's going on. They got to make at least some sort of move. And it's not going to be this year. It might not even be 2 years from now. But they've got a lot of young, serviceable guys. I really like Blake Wesley. When Dominic Barlow's had a chance to play, whether it's in summer league or near the end of the season last year, a guy out of overtime elite, I think he's been pretty serviceable. They've got a lot of just kind of cheap scratch-off type guys. And if one of them turns into a star, it's low risk. And like you said, they bring in those salary dump guys and just cut them. That they don't care about doing that. They don't care what it takes to kind of they're accumulating picks, and they're going to use those to accumulate that low risk talent that is kind of necessary for that rebuilding team.
Yeah, I think there are pieces here that I think are going to stick for the Spurs. You know, obviously you got Victor. I think Devin Vassell is a really good player. Like, I think he's going to be very valuable for this team again, and I thought he was worth the contract. And then like, a player like Zach Collins, I think, is almost like the perfect pairing you want for Wembanyama. You know, he's not going to demand the ball, but he knows how to feed the post really well. He knows how to feed Victor. And, you know, he just does the little things that, like, you know, Victor's, you know, muscle mass has obviously been a big talking point throughout his whole draft process. I think Zach Collins is going to be able to rebound, kind of do some of those traditional center things that allows Victor to kind of explore his entire skill set that I think is vast. So I think those guys are really going to stick. I think Trey Jones is just going to help set the table. I thought he's been a really good backup point guard. Obviously stepping into the starting role, I don't think he's a starting caliber guard, but he should just help in that sort of situation. And I'm with you too with Keldon Johnson. Like, I think Johnson's fine, but I also was like, I would talk myself a little more into the Spurs if they upgraded Keldon Johnson. Like I think there was the rumor at one point that they were interested in Tyler Hero for a potential Dame trade as that third team. And like, if it was Tyler Johnson and Keldon Johnson spot, or Tyler Johnson, not Tyler Johnson, he's not in the league anymore. If it was Tyler Hero and Keldon Johnson spot, I think I'd feel a little bit better about the Spurs too going forward this season, just as a slight upgrade to him at the position. If it was an Austin Reeves, if they made a trade for a Zach LaVine type of player, Riley's going to get mad at me for that one. But, you know, if it was one of those guys, I think that would change it a little bit. But, you know, I don't think they're in a rush to do that. I think they want to see this grow.
Absolutely. And shout out Tyler Johnson, big Heat culture guy, got his bag from Brooklyn and then proceeded to not do as well as I think a lot of people predicted he was going to. So shout out Tyler Johnson. Really appreciate the awareness. That'll help some people with their hoop grids later as we get that savvy Heat and Nets square to fill for sure. I'm very excited for the Spurs team. I do want to close with one special thing. I asked a slightly inflammatory question to Matt when he finished on his last podcast. I asked him which Minnesota player he would like to steal as a young guy for Boston, as they've had a tendency to do that. They've taken all my good young players away. I'm not going to do that with you. San Antonio is going to open their season against your Dallas Mavericks. I want you to non-biasedly and realistically predict what Victor Wembanyama's stat line is going to look like in your season opener against Dallas. Is this the coming out party, or is this a welcome to the NBA moment for the number one pick?
Well, he's running into the Victor Wembanyama stopper that is Dwight Powell. So,
you couldn't even say that with a straight face. Come on, the Victor Wembanyama stopper. Dwight Powell hasn't stopped anybody in years.
No, I mean he should be able to get his buckets. I mean, he's going to be able to shoot over everybody. You know, obviously Derek Lively is going to give it the old college try, but I mean, yeah, I could see Wembanyama with a 25-8-5 with 3 or 4 blocks. So I'm curious. The most fascinating thing about that opening game, you know, just as a side point, is like Luka loves to get bigs and switches and kind of do his crossover thing and hit that step back. I'm curious to see how that looks the first time he switches Wembanyama on him, because he usually relishes in that opportunity to go at the other guy. You know, how is he going to handle that opportunity to go at Wemby, and how is Wemby going to handle playing that step back? That's going to be the most fascinating thing of the game. Definitely.
So what I'm hearing is that midway through the third quarter, Luka's going to catch Wemby on a switch. He's going to dribble him down at the end of the shot clock. And instead of hoisting up a shot, he's going to pump fake, drive to the rim, and posterize Wemby for his welcome to the NBA moment. Give me a 0 out of 10 rating of that happening. with Luka's noted vertical that he's worked so
Luka
hard at.
Dunking on Wembanyama. I guess I'll go -4.
-4. Wow. But not a lot of confidence in your guy to get up on the biggest man of the NBA.
You said third quarter. He is like. Do you know who Luka Doncic is? He is relishing that opportunity. First possession of the game, he's switching Wembanyama on to him. I guarantee the first offensive possession, he is putting Wembanyama on him and seeing if he can go at him. That's what I'm looking forward to.
All right. Well, you heard it here first. Luka is going to cook Wembanyama at every possible opportunity in the season opener.
Did not say that.
that's exactly what I heard, and that's what we're going to take to the bank, and it's on the record now. So that's what I heard. Kyle Grondin, I really appreciate you coming on, man. It was a lot of fun. I appreciate talking hoop with you. We'll have to do this again midway through the season here. For myself, for producer Mikey, who's going to put this up hopefully tomorrow, we're going to go ahead and say goodnight. So thanks for listening. My next episode will be dropping later this week. It will be the Southeast Division. I'm excited to talk about some Heat culture, some Brandon Miller, and a lot of Jordan Poole talk. I'm very excited to talk about this next division here. So for myself, for Kyle, thanks for coming. Thanks for listening. And we'll talk again soon. Peace.